You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
On No Sweatpants at Work Zone.
The reason I've listened since overnight is you and Mraz bring the insight. You bring the honesty. You bring the stuff we want to hear. It is the cheese talk.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The cheese talk. It's why we're here.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
Thanks for being with us. You can watch the show on any device. Check out the simulcast at watchda.com. That's also mobile friendly. Join CBS on the road to the Final Four with the great NCAA basketball this weekend. Saturday at 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific, Auburn heads to Lexington to take on fourth-ranked Kentucky, followed by number 16 Florida State against eighth-ranked UNC in Chapel Hill. Then on Sunday, Villanova tips off against Xavier at 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific, and the weekend concludes when seventh-ranked Michigan hosts number 10 Michigan State. Madness is in the air!
CBS Spectacular, yeah!
Other madness in the air, spring football. And our next guest is all things authority on spring football. He wrote the dominant book of the USFL called Football for a Buck. We had him on a couple of months ago to discuss that amazing book. He's a New York Times best-selling author and also working on a new book about the Lakers of Shaq and Kobe era, Jeff Perlman. Jeff, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you.
Always good to have you here on the show. And yesterday there was kind of big AAF news because we had the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes infusing $250 million worth of cash into this league. Were you surprised at that news? What was your reaction after doing all of the research you did about the USFL?
My reaction was, this is not a good sign at all. And I was actually really disappointed to hear that because it's a terrible, terrible sign for that league that they already are in sort of financial peril and had to take that step. And there are a lot of echoes. I mean, I've been getting a lot of calls this week, the USFL, can you compare? And I didn't think there were that many really great comparisons, but this is the first one where you're like, oh, that's a really bad sign about a league that needs financial help this early.
What now, the $250 million should be able to keep a league afloat for a really long time, but what is it about this announcement at this time that makes you feel like, oh, this is a really bad sign?
Well, I mean, it means that they didn't really do their financial planning wasn't very good. I mean, the thing that I really liked about this league and what sort of seemed very encouraging was centralized ownership, the league control, not going after big name superstars, so everything was affordable. And so to take this step, it just really screams that their financial planning isn't quite what it seems and that they don't quite know what they were doing. So it's to me, it's very discouraging. It really is. I'm not just saying that. I want this league to succeed. I love new leagues. But it's really, really a bad sign early on that they have to take this step. Like, really a bad sign.
Because at the heart of the USFL's demise was owners in competition with other owners, right? With a centralized league, it kind of takes that part out of it. So that makes this somewhat safer?
Well, you would think so, because you're not going to have bidding wars, right? You're not going to have bidding wars. You're not going to have Donald Trump or Bill Odenberg come along and blow up the spending scale. And that's a good thing. You know, the USFL, one of the big things that happened early on, back in the first season, the 83 season, is the owner of the Michigan Panthers decided, we really want to win, so we're going to spend millions on three offensive linemen. And as soon as they did that, everybody started spending on everything. If you're going to spend an offensive lineman, I'm going to get that halfback. If you're going to get that halfback, I'm going to get that quarterback. So I thought the really good thing about the alliance is you're not going to have that issue. And that takes care of a lot of the financial problems, is a competitiveness won't be there. So again, to see this, I don't know how it reached that point that quickly. But and the other thing that really concerns me is the attendance figures. The attendance figures are not great. And you look at the stadiums, and they do look really small, and the ticket prices are way too high for a new league. That's another thing I do not understand at all. The price of tickets is way too high.
Jeff Perlman joins us this morning here on the show because one of the things about the USFL, as you researched and experienced and remember, was that early attendance figures for most of the USFL was really, really good, right?
Yeah, they did. They drew well. And, I mean, certain markets didn't. Washington was a disaster. But they drew well because the one thing they actually had, they had some names. You know, they had Herschel Walker. So you knew when Herschel Walker was coming to town, you're going to go see Herschel Walker. They had a lot of sort of big, you know, like this sounds quaint in hindsight. You know, Chuck Fucino was a quarterback of the Philadelphia Stars. Well, Chuck Fucino, a couple years earlier, was a runner-up in the Heisman Trophy voting at Penn State. He was a big regional name. So they were able to pull off of that. And I don't think the Alliance has some interesting names, but I don't think Trent Richardson is necessarily going to draw you fans in and of himself. I don't think Kristen Hackenberg is going to draw fans in and of himself. I want this league to succeed really well, but you can't charge this much for tickets early on. You have to draw people in with promotions, with affordable tickets, and hope they like the product. So I'm a little, there's some things I don't like what I see.
Skeptics would say that maybe we don't have the appetite for football year-round because the NFL is kind of year-round. We're into the scouting combine now and then the NFL draft and free agency. Do you think there's an appetite around the country to watch live football in the spring?
I think there could be. I mean, I really think markets, you know, I always say location, location, location. Like, I don't understand having teams in Atlanta. I don't understand the team in Arizona. I think, you know, putting teams in cities, sort of Birmingham, Orlando, places like Boise, I'm just throwing out cities, you know, Memphis, that makes sense where they don't have NFL teams and you can get that sort of almost NFL experience and you can take your kid to a game. I think that makes sense. But certainly in NFL cities, I can't imagine as much of a need for more football when you already have a team and an established team. I'm not trying to sell a book here, I swear. That was another lesson of the USFL, that generally the markets with NFL franchises did not do nearly as well as the markets where there was no team before.
Well, maybe just because I just read your book a couple of months ago and we had you on to talk about it, but every time I sit down to watch the Alliance, and I've watched a bunch of games already, I can't help but think about your book, and I can't help but think about the USFL. There feels like there's a lot of correlations and a lot of similarities and a lot of lessons to be learned. But when you look at the league, do you see similarities or a lot of differences?
See, I see a lot of similarities in the regional, trying to have regional players on the teams. You know, playing in a different season. I see those. The funky uniforms are kind of neat. But again, the centralized ownership was the one that I was like, yeah, there's something learned. There's a really good lesson learned right there, not having the owners spending against each other all the time. And then when I saw they needed that much money, I thought, oh, crap. It kind of is like the USFL. Because the USFL was hemorrhaging money from the very beginning. I mean, the World League, the World Football League in the 70s, same problem. That you're going to lose money at the beginning. And it felt like they had a sort of way of not having that as such a big problem. And now I'm not so sure.
One of the coolest things I think about when you work on books is that you take a lot of your followers and readers behind the process of making those books and of writing those books and stories behind tracking down interviews. You've been pretty transparent about tracking down interviews with this Shaq, Kobe, Showtime Lakers of the late 90s, early 2000s run. How has it been trying to put together the anecdotes of that era?
Oh, it's been fun, really fun. I a couple weeks ago, so every now and then I'll get an address and I don't have a phone number. I'll just find an address and I'll just show up at someone's house. And 2000-2001 season, the Lakers had J.R. Ryder for a year. All I had was an address in Arizona, and I was going to be out in Phoenix anyway. So I knocked on his door randomly with a book and a note. And usually if someone's not there, I'll just leave the book and the note. But a kid answers the door, then a woman comes to the door, and then JR comes to the door. And he's like, who are you? What are you doing here? You know, it was kind of awkward. And that comes with knocking on a guy's door at 9 in the morning randomly. What are you doing here? And I'm like, wow, I wrote this book, and I had my USFL book. I did this book, and blah, blah, blah. He's like, man, bro, you can't just show up at someone's door. Bro, you can't just... So what's the book about? Well, it's about the Lakers. Oh, so like Shaq, Kobe? Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, all right, man, I have a good feel for you. And we ended up talking for an hour and a half, and he was awesome. So, you know, I love the hunt of finding guys and tracking down. It's one of the joys of the profession.
They win three straight titles, but everybody always knows they could have won more. Now that we're about, I guess, 15 years or so removed from the end of that, Do you feel like there's a lot of remorse between Shaq, Kobe, and everybody else that they did not keep that together because of ego?
No. I think maybe from the supporting cast of Rick Fox and Robert Ory's and those guys. I think Kobe enjoyed his career far more when Shaq was gone. And I think Shaq would say, I should have stayed in Orlando. That with that base of Penny Hardaway and Nick Anderson and Dennis Scott, we could have won 5 or 6 titles, and that was probably the more talented team if you actually look at the roster than the Laker team he was on. So I actually think if anything, I don't think he delves in regret even remotely, but I think he would say I could have won the most staying in Orlando.
What's the big surprise for you as you've researched and talked to people in this book? Something that really kind of you were taken aback by about that era.
I mean, I'll tell you one thing. It's not a huge surprise, but I really do believe, and I've thought about so much. So when Shaq and Kobe arrived, that team was a Nick Van Exel, Eddie Jones, Cedric Sevalius, Eldon Campbell. They were a far more talented team with Del Harris as their coach. Like a far more talented team. If you look at that team, and in his prime, Nick Van Exel, and in his prime, Cedric Sevalius, and coming into his prime, Eddie Jones, they were really, really loaded. But they were just painfully immature. And I'm actually really fascinated by the Del Harris years of that team. Like, I love the minutia of those sort of things and just how good they really could have been. And people forget how good they actually were. They weren't championship caliber. They were really close. And there's this whole what if they had kept that core together. I sat down for 10 hours with Del Harris in Texas. And, you know, I think he really believes, and maybe rightly so, that they could have won championships if they just left that thing intact. But they didn't.
Huh. When does that book come out?
That comes out in spring of 2020, so about a year from now.
One day, do you think you'll be writing about the LeBron Lakers?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, they're probably not even going to make the playoffs this year, so I don't know how fondly we'll have to see how it turns out.
Jeff Perlman joining us this morning on the show. Jeff, it's always good to catch up, my man. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks for having me.
You got it. Jeff Perlman joining us here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.